It's the Ag Watcher Show. It's the Ag Watcher Show. It's the Ag Watcher Show.
Hi, I'm Ben Pankhurst from AgTech by Design, and I'm on the Ag Watchers podcast to talk about AI and agriculture.
There we go. See, Matt? See, that's the difference when you give people a heads up.
When you give them a warning. That's it. When they're not told 1 second before we press record to do the intro. So, but Matt, my method's authentic, though. When I just forget to tell them, then it's like,
It's just it's unprofessional, and we've had complaints about it. So...
We usually do complaints and compliments, but actually I was presenting at Mortlake last night, and the team there, a very, very, very clever team of producers there, it was a good group of Mortlake producers for beef, they knew about us, and they were very complimentary of the podcast and also very complimentary of our AI-generated graphics we're using on our other entity.
Someone on Instagram, and they're very good.
Yeah.
Well, what we're just doing is we're trying to join AI revolution alongside you. So, but what we've got to do, Ben, is we do have to make sure that you are got full the insights that we can provide.
Mm-hmm.
We need to make sure that you are compos mentis. We've got to do a bit of a psychological test on you before we get into the proper conversation. We're going to run our neural link.
Artificial intelligence,
psychological test.
Algorithmic
model.
Hyperion.
Did we forget any? Blockchain. And blockchain and organic.
Powered by blockchain.
And it's
solar powered too.
And it's regenerative agriculture as well.
That's it, yeah.
So we've got all the buzzwords, so we should get some funding any minute now from Silicon Valley. We're going to throw a word or phrase at you. And I want you to come back with the first thing that comes to mind.
Easy.
And I've got some curly ones today, actually, mate.
All right.
The AI algorithm is upping the game.
Giving you a few extra ones. All right.
You go first.
I'll go first. Artificial intelligence.
Opportunity. There's absolutely a lot of opportunity around AI, especially in agriculture and especially in Australia, given that we work at it as well.
If you had a time machine and you could go back to any period, where would it be?
Just back or can I go forward?
Cool. You can go forward.
It's a time machine, mate.
You can go wherever you want.
I'd like to go forward a couple hundred years to see how we do. If we end up extinguishing ourselves or not.
Have you ever seen Planet of the Apes?
I have.
Damn them. Guess. Damn them all to Matt?
Machinery manufacturing in Australia.
Important for value-adding. A lot of our exports are single stage of the resource. So I think one of the biggest things we can do in this country is increasing the sort of value-adding we do onshore.
Brock's footwear.
Camouflage. I used to have a camo pair when I was a kid, but now I'm desperately, desperately yearning for a steel-toed pair.
Do they have steel-toed?
I've Googled it and we're in short supply. We have to write a petition.
Might be able to build some technology that can, what do they call those printing things? 3D printing.
3D printing.
We've got one of those.
You might be able to do one that actually 3D prints a croc
back on track.
Black pudding.
Never had it. Open to it.
Technology and agriculture.
Vastly important for food security.
That's all six. I reckon you've listened to a few of these before because you seem very well prepared for those six cents. Particularly,
I'm a fan.
So what we're going to have to do though, it's like playing Call of Duty, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're going to do is we probably started off over the last 100 odd episodes that we've been doing the psychological test on easy mode.
So now we're going to
have to go into extreme mode. Low health, no bullets. You've only got sort of one shot.
What's your relationship with your father type deal?
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah,
that's deep. Jeez. Jeezy peeps. AI. Yeah. The reason we sort of thought we'd get you on is because you're presenting not necessarily alongside us, but we're presenting on the same platform as you at the Future Ag Expo. You're obviously the sort of the highbrow part of the day because it's all about intelligent stuff like artificial intelligence and what it can mean for agriculture, and we're talking about markets. So tell us what you're going to be talking about. Give us a brief summary of what you're going to be talking about.
It's going to be a 20-minute talk about AI and agriculture. It's right in the name. And specifically going over sort of where the industry can benefit from it and where the industry will be hindered by it. So there's obviously different sort of facets of AI. You have the science fiction true AI, which is self-thinking, can disobey orders, science fiction. What we have today and what was used a lot in the market is machine learning. Machine learning is quite literally teaching computers patterns in data. And so that's what we'll be going over. What I'll be going over in that talk is sort of how the industry has already and will continue to leverage machine learning and pattern recognition built on computers, especially in all sort of areas and industries within agriculture.
I noticed that in so that's part of what you do for the business
Oh,
you run.
we probably should have started off with who are you?
Yeah, that's what I was going to
That
say.
would have made sense.
Well, yeah, but that's all right because the question I'm going to ask leads into that around the actual business you're running because I did a quick little bit of we do some level of research before you have our guests on, of course, and I kind of sussed out and I noticed there was one particular phrase again that was a bit of a buzzword, probably back. Oh, just I would say even 15 years ago when and we never spoke AI, but we had a phrase that was neural networks was one of the first ones that came out. Because I remember neural networks were being discussed even back when I was still currency trading because they were trying to. And you mentioned then as well about AI looking at pattern recognition, and that's what they were talking about with neural networks, about using neural networks in currency or financial markets to try and pick patterns in, price movements of currencies or commodities or interest rates. And so the investment managers at the time were very interested in the technology to try and see how they could use that to help them, predict what's happening in the future via this neural network. What's the difference, or is there a difference between neural network stuff and AI, or is that all part of the same game?
It's all under the same umbrella, yeah. A neural network is quite literally an array, a very dense array of artificial neurons like you have in your brain. They're each assigned sort of weights, and when you train a model, you either assign a correct or an incorrect value to each node, and you have dense layers, you have output layers. There's a lot of different nuance when you build an AI model, but it's literally building a brain in a computer. Like the neural networks, or if you feed an image into a neural network and you've trained the neural network to recognize that image, then this array of neurons will be able to sort of sort through the data. It'll pre-process the data, and then it'll look for predefined patterns in the data, and then it'll spit out a result. But there's a whole sort of network you can get into there.
Because it was just before
I
we
want to ask a quick.
well, well,
Oh,
well no because you're going to take over this one and I just want to get this question in otherwise because it's relevant. Neural networks we started with, then it became what they called machine learning and algorithms became the big buzzword, and then the next thing now was AI. But that's that transition of those buzzwords. That's all AI, isn't it?
yeah, it was sort of like the industry or sort of the
No,
community
I'm not quite
learning as
sure.
we go.
I'm not quite sure what's happening on Matt's screen, but
I don't know what's happened there
balloons. It keeps
I
having
don't know.
balloons showing up on.
Yeah, I've got no idea. I don't know. Maybe it's something I'm saying.
Thought that was Andrew
Anyway,
messing with you.
it's not your birthday, is it?
No.
No. Okay. I don't know why that's twice that's happened.
I don't know why it's doing it
It's
either. I thought
the AI taking over.
it was Andrew. I thought it was Andrew doing
Yeah,
something as
so
well.
Yeah, it wasn't me.
but
Don't
yeah,
know what that is.
as the industry learned and grew around AI, it became neural, or it started off as neural networks, it became machine learning, and then it sort of got taken over by the whole artificial intelligence umbrella. But like I mentioned before, there's two, the science and the science fiction. Some companies are trying to make science fiction into just science reality. That's another whole kettle of fish. But yeah, it's really, when you get into the weeds of it, there's a lot of different terms that are used broadly across the industry for it.
And quite interchangeable. I was going to actually ask about image recognition, yeah? Not about agriculture, but just about image recognition for AI. When you're doing those Google, like, we're not sure you're the right person, want to check you're a human, and it asks you pick out five fire hydrants or pick up two crosswalks or whatever, yeah? Or the motorcycles in this picture. Is that used for pattern recognition to sense check?
Well, that's sort of just to trick malware or to trick like phishing software.
Yeah, but I thought it was actually used in the background as well for...
Oh, yes, actually, I did hear about that in another podcast. You're dead right. I can't remember the name of the company, but I'm pretty sure it was an American company that actually used that capture, or maybe it was capture, the people that actually own the software, that actually used that to train neural networks.
Yeah, that's what I was just wondering, because that's a pretty cool sort of way of taking one thing and then sort of throwing it to a different purpose.
They quite literally crowdsourced their data sets.
Yeah.
Presumably, a neural network could be taught how to, like, with nowadays, can't the computing systems already do that now?
But you've got to start somewhere, haven't you?
Mm. Yeah. I mean, this is sort of to prevent hackers from getting into websites or to prevent bots from getting in and sort of just messing with the way that the websites work. But presumably, assuming you have access to the images that they're using, you could conceivably design a program.
Tell us what your business does, and then we'll talk about AI's impact on agriculture. And then I want to get into the science fiction part of AI.
Sure. So my business is AgTech by Design. I'm co-founder and chief technology officer. We build AI-powered spray berms. So tow spray berm behind a tractor, will run over fields, and it'll detect weeds with AI per species, which is really our sort of market value adding. So it's detecting the weeds by the species and able to spray them with the selective chemical, and also return that data to the farmer. So we've seen between 75 and 95% savings in chemical across our trials.
Mm-hmm.
And we primarily focus on horticulture and viticulture at the moment.
Okay, so that's where the big value would be, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
And in terms of that, you're at a trial stage just now, or are you a commercial sort of product?
We're about a month away from being commercial. We're about to start a trial with five industry growers, which is going to really give us a lot of data, or insights into our data, I should say. A trial with PIRZA on Kangaroo Island in South Australia. And we've received a lot of interest from a lot of different industries across the country, a lot of broadacre and dryland farming, even the mangoes in the Northern Territory, and particularly vineyards, almonds, and citrus.
So you've got something that then retrofits onto the existing equipment that's out there. Is that right? Or you're custom builder, or how do you get your technology programming side, neural networking, whatever software?
How do you match software and hardware?
Yeah, to the actual hardware, yeah. Thanks, Andrew, the question.
We do manufacture standalone booms. We do a 3 meter and a 6 meter in Australia for obviously vineyards and for orchards. They can just tow behind a tractor. We can have a 3-point linkage unit or a trailered unit. And then we do also offer a retrofit service. So a lot of our clients have the triple row shrouded sprayers used in orchards and vineyards, and we are retrofitting the system, the weed selector system, onto the shrouded sprayers. It's obviously a different different task, but it's absolutely possible because the technology is separate.
Okay.
It operates independently of the operator. Obviously, the operator can have an in-cab controller to do section control, target blanket spraying instead of targeted spraying. But it's really the simplicity of it relies on the independence from the vehicle.
Mm. And so to get me right in my head, basically it's got cameras on the boom facing down, and then it detects, it can see, okay, there's a bit of ryegrass, and it can say, spray this on it, doom, 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 and just selectively, it's like variable rate sort of fertilizer application, similar sort of thing.
Yeah, pretty much.
Where it can see it. Well, I guess I was just thinking, like, the last couple of years, I can see why farmers are interested in it, because the last couple of years, chemical prices were pretty high.
Yeah.
And they will be high in the future. But I guess on top of that, there's a lot of new regulation coming out of the EU.
Runoff and stuff.
And chemical usage and whatnot. This has the capacity to sort of reduce that chemical usage for cost savings, but also to meet government regulation. That's pretty cool.
I'm gonna demonstrate my ignorance in what happened.
I also want to actually just highlight that I'm actually the CTO of our business as well.
Episode 3 and AgWatchers. You've got a dual CTO role.
I've got a dual CTO, yeah. So yeah, I'm chief technology officer.
Although you could be classified as the only technology officer in the organization as well. My ignorance of the spraying process. Now, when you said, like, because obviously you're identifying different weeds as you're going along too, I presume for some different stuff you spray different chemicals from time to time. I'm guessing that's the case. Does your system, can you do like multiple different things at once in terms of identifies different weeds of different types and then sprays them for whatever they need, or does it all just get sprayed with glyphosate?
It's what growers call a brew sometimes. You just, depending on what species of weeds you have on your property or on your block, you'll mix a certain mix of chemicals in your spray tank and then go out and spray those. Really sort of the data return of the weed select system is really useful because we allow growers to actually see like a GPS map of the weeds in their field by species. So then let's say they've got 68% calthrops, whatever percent of fathead or something, and they can look up what they're going to need to, or consult us on what they're going to need to put in their spray tank to most accurately target those weeds and get the highest kill percentage you can get.
I was just curious, like in terms like the cameras, like what resolution are the cameras?
They are 1080p cameras, so pretty much similar to what your webcams
are.
It's like
a HD sort of camera.
Yeah, exactly.
And so you could technically just run it across and then again have a map of roughly what your weeds are, because different parts of paddock are going to have different weeds potentially.
Yeah,
but you could sort of have a map, even if you didn't spray it, you could have a map.
Yeah,
and then
that would sort of, you could do that. But if you're out there looking at weeds, you might as well spray them.
Might as well spray at the same time. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do they need to be at a certain stage for identification, or like how, you know, like if they, you know, when weeds start, they're quite small. But what kind of, you know, you're talking kind of they've got to get to a certain size before they can actually be picked up or identified properly.
So obviously the smaller they are, it's harder for the camera to pick them up, but we feed images into our AI model or into our annotated data set, which then goes into the model of weeds throughout their growth cycle.
Hmm.
So pretty much from when they're a couple of leaves poking out of the ground to when they get up to big shrubs, that sort of data segmentation really helps the model accurately detect the weeds out of background noise.
So have you looked to see on average how much you save in terms of application? Like what are you talking at 10%, 50%, 80%? What's the savings in terms of volume used if you're just broad spraying rather than selective spraying? What's the, you know, is there a rough assessment of what you're saving?
So we're based out of Loxton in South Australia, and our workshop's actually right behind a vineyard. We have really good access to training and testing. And what we've found through our testing in this vineyard is between 75 and 95% savings.
Right, so significant.
This vineyard has a couple of different attributes to a lot of commercial ones. It's a privately owned one. Provided that the model is a good fit, because it does vary case to case, client to client, they will have different soil types, they'll have different weeds, different moisture levels, different shade, different sun. But assuming the model's calibrated correctly, then we're looking at about 70 to 95%.
That's pretty good.
That's cool. That's a lot. Obviously, a couple of years, like 2 years ago, glyphosate was $14 a liter, give or take. You know, that would have made a huge saving. It's a huge saving even when it's at sort of $5 a liter.
Mm.
But I think, again, probably importantly in sort of things like viticulture and orchards is reducing the chemical spray and chemical drift, which this would have. Have you ever, this is probably a bit of a left field one, yeah? Could you integrate sort of a more mechanical solution into it, where instead of spraying, you're actually lopping off the weed, so it could be used for organics?
So that is actually another facet or another method of selective weeding.
Yeah,
is mechanical pickers. We have a lot of, not competition, but we know a lot of other players in the space who are doing mechanical weeding. So, like you say, it's a small blade that runs through the dirt and can jump up and down to pick out the weed.
There's one that burns them as well, I think, doesn't it? There's another one.
Yeah, laser weeding, yeah.
You want to do that last week in South Australia?
Well, no.
But you're dead right. That is another method of picking out weeds, and we opted to go with chemical, based on simplicity operation. There's less parts to break on the machine, so it'll last longer. It'll be cheaper for the grower because we don't have to spend a lot of money developing it. And the chemical industry already is huge in this country. Working with what growers know and have used for de potentially decades, we found a really good synergistic relationship between us as the provider and the grower in terms of them not having to switch what they do and just being able to use the same chemicals they've been using for a long time.
That's pretty
Are
cool.
there other areas like obviously this, you know, you're geared towards the spraying application space, and that's what your software is doing, identifying and then applying, and it matches in with the existing hardware for spraying. But I presume there could, like, if there was technology, as we get more robotic type technology and other stuff, if there's kind of fruit pickers or harvesters or even other applications like, you know, using the visual AI type neural network to look at pictures of, say, cattle as they're going through a run, and providing a, you know, some kind of data on their muscle scores or, you know, fat scores. I presume the software could be
I guess
finessed to do a whole lot of stuff,
as
right?
long as there's enough data.
Yeah,
Yeah, if you've got,
absolutely.
if you've got pictures, because obviously cattle going through the run, you can weigh them pretty easy, but weighing an animal is different to seeing what condition it's in terms of, you know, muscle mass or fat score. So whereas that's a visual, that's what's being done visually presently, but presumably you could apply the same type of stuff to the network process, you know, in terms of what, building a neural network or an AI assisted, you know, tool.
That's really where artificial intelligence or machine learning comes into its stride, is with pattern recognition. So if you feed a neural network 10,000 annotated images of cows with different fat percentages going through a run, like you said, it would, you'd obviously have to find finesses in the data and properly tune your model, which can take, it's a month-long process to properly tune and train a data set into a model. There's really an art to it, but if presumably you get it right and you have a really, really accurate model, you could get the fat content of cows going for a run in real time. Or some of the applications we've looked at is, instead of pr spraying herbicide on weeds, we spray fertilizer on vegetables or on plants, the bottom of trees, spraying fruit fly repellent onto targets in vineyards or orchards, counting cows with drones. There's a whole sort of, like I said, as long as there's, you're recognizing patterns in data, or you're looking for things like you mentioned, image recognition, or recognizing the images, which is just the pattern in the data, then really the application is, it's pretty limitless.
We talked a bit about your business and your boom sprays, but what other benefits do you think AI can have for agriculture? I'm curious.
I see a lot of
Apart from removing market analysts.
Yeah, they're panicking a bit right now, aren't
Why do you think I'm so sweaty looking?
but I mean, AI and ag, there's so many applications. I mean, like I said, we've looked at spraying fertilizer just on the plant instead of on the dirt. We had a prototype idea a couple of years ago for a drone, or a fleet of drones, that would go up in the sky and count your herd in a paddock or a couple of paddocks, and then use tone generators to herd them into, or another field, or wherever you wanted to put them. There's obviously a lot at the moment in soil measuring, soil moisture, sort of patterns in rainfall, patterns in pH levels and nitrogen levels. There's a lot of broadacre spraying tech out there. So we are, as far as we know, one of the only companies producing smart spraying for viticulture and horticulture, where there's five or six companies producing it for broadacre spraying. So obviously spraying weeds is quite a good application for it. But across the industry, I see a huge growth in not only new companies, but new benefits being uncovered for AI, because we don't really know all the things we can do with it yet. We're still creating new models, we're still creating new methods of detection, new sensors, new data types. It's really, if you want to get into agriculture, I would say, like, learning AI is the best way to sort of be a part of the growth in the future.
You could, when you're saying that about identifying cattle in the livestock and then potentially moving them or identifying a new area, presumably with better vegetation growth to move them to, I was just thinking you could almost have a situation in the future where if things were automated and you had drones, it would go out and kind of shuffle them along. The drones could be directed by the AI to shuffle these animals to the area that's been identified by some neural network visual thing. And you wouldn't even have to go out of your, you could just sit back in the office like a big computer game. Wouldn't even have to go out and hardly do anything, would you?
You absolutely could.
I'm also curious about, I've got an idea for you.
Shoot.
And this is a new pricing model for you. So you've got a name a weed, ryegrass.
Sure, right? Ryegrass.
Right. So you've got to then feed in thousands upon thousands of pictures into this, so it identifies it from different angles, different light sources, different all sorts of things. So the more the AI can see that, the more easily it can identify that ryegrass. Yeah.
Yeah, it builds a sort of an approximation of the class or the weed you're trying to identify. The more images you feed in, pretty much the better it'll work.
Yeah. So then you've got name another weed, thistle.
Bat hen.
So you do the same again. You feed in tens of thousands of pictures. The AI picks it up. Microtransactions.
Oh, God.
That's a good idea.
What?
What? So how many weeds are you hitting is how much you charge or something?
No.
What?
You get your computer software, your computer software on your spray rig will only work on the weeds that you've paid to detect. So you might be able to say, right, mate, if you want thistle, it's an extra $500.
I'm actually gonna pull you up. Being a Scotsman, and I know we've got listeners like Auntie Julie back in Scotland, to call thistle a weed is sacrilegious to your nation, Andrew Whitelaw.
The thistle is a weed.
Well, it's in Scotland.
Do you know how we chose the weed as a national flower?
Yeah, I've heard the joke from Danny Boy.
Yeah, okay, well, there you go. It was cheap.
It was free.
It was free. They're giving it away. but you could go down that model. You could go microtransactions, or is that a no-go?
I feel like that sort of crosses our philosophy of trying to help growers. I mean, that might undo all the work we're doing, I think.
A bit of extra profiteering.
Yeah.
Exactly. What you want to do is introduce all the boom sprays so you get market penetration and then switch to a microtransaction model.
And then whacking with a big fee. Yeah, I don't think so.
I've got an alternative, another idea, and it harks back to my original discussion I had when I was first interested in neural networks when I was back trading currencies. Could you train, or have you tried to train a neural network type computer thing to look at a whole series of, you know, the charts you get, you know, when you see a price chart for, say, wheat or something, if you just showed it loads and loads of historic price charts through different time frames and, you know, episodes, could the machine not potentially recognize patterns in movements of charts and then what happens beyond that kind of period to then be able to predict, if you show that then a brand new chart of up to date, what's the most likely movement of the price and where is it going to go? Couldn't it also do that if it can predict these kind of patterns?
But it doesn't also know what's happening. It doesn't know that Putin's going to invade Russia.
And the other thing
as well is it can't make the updates and the information on it entertaining.
Well, I could see that he got very defensive when I mentioned about a neural network.
How come you use grains as an example? You don't use livestock.
Well, okay. Well, it could be any, but I just picked grains because I'm looking for a new grains analyst. But but what I was getting at was that there is a school of, like, there's economics to analyze markets, which we use, of course, Andrew. But in a lot of financial markets specifically, there's another type of analysis called technical analysis, which basically just relies on
mumbo jumbo.
Well, not necessarily. It relies on the chart and the visuals and the acknowledgement that there are, you know, patterns in markets that can be identified. So it's just pattern recognition. If you're a classic technical, there are some people that trade markets that only use.
We've answered this question before.
What?
We had Marcel from Argentina on.
But he was doing
He was using AI to create. Was it
the visual stuff looking at the actual charts? He was looking at other algorithms.
It's using the technical indicators, which are whilst they're visually represented, they are still represented in data. You know, yeah, your RSI, your moving averages,
but this is. But this is coming at it from a different way because you're building it to look at it like a visual thing rather than a data-backed thing. His algorithms were data-based, right? Numbers. Whereas I'm saying building something that actually replicates a visual concept of looking at it
the
like
neural network is going to change that image into data anyway.
Is it?
The image is data. It's just to answer your question, yes, you could build similar to what they're doing with the stock exchanges or with commodities or currencies or cryptocurrency to look at the trends in data specifically and with feeding in external data like time, weather, season, what type of crop it is, how the market's reacting, even external factors like you mentioned, the war. That stuff would massively increase the ability for a neural network to predict prices.
Because if you could get something like that working accurately and you could get 60-70% accuracy on prediction of that, you wouldn't need the clients at all. You could just start trading commodities and currencies and everything else and
back. That'd be fantastic if that AI was 60-70% accurate. So it's 20% less accurate than me.
I mean, like Andrew mentioned,
I'm all good.
There is always the external factor that the AI won't be able to predict, like another pandemic or a massive, God forbid, a massive infestation.
Or the AI creates its own events.
It becomes self-aware. That could be even really like Judgment Day. Yeah.
Bring back Sarah Connor.
It starts taking its own positions in the market and then giving false advice.
Can we go into sort of the more wider AI?
Sure.
ChatGPT. I'm assuming you've used ChatGPT and you played around with it like everyone else.
Yes.
I don't think that's AI. Like, it's more like it's an advanced search algorithm, I think.
It is AI.
Damn.
The first clue should be that it was made by a company called OpenAI. That'd have been a good hint, but it was trained by these engineers who fed literally all of the information they had into this machine learning model and then paired it up with a chatbot. So like we used to have on website, or we still have on websites, that you put in what you want to help with. They're awful. But if an AI, if that had access to all of history, then it can, tell you what to do. Then the different thing about ChatGPT is it's not sentient. It can't create music, but it can write essays or write stories, or it can even write computer code.
But can it create anything that's not already been created by a human?
That's a bit of an ethical question. I mean,
I love it.
If you ask it to create something new, like the new model can do images and videos now, the one they've just released can create almost indistinguishably realistic videos. It's really scary.
But is it really creating that, or is it really just basing its views and what it creates is really based on what's already been produced?
Exactly. Like, that's sort of the ethical dilemma, is if it creates a new piece of art or if it creates an image, is it a new image or is it something that's created based on an approximation of all the art that's ever been made?
Isn't that, if you look at something like something creative, like the creation of a new movie or something, right? Or a song even, that people are creating themselves. But isn't there one adage that, like, they say, in the storylines of movies is based about 8 or 9 different storylines of what happens, and almost every movie is that one of those 8 storylines. So even a brand new movie right now created by a person is no different to what they've seen in the past and what they've decided as a story, right? And AI is doing the same stuff, isn't it?
Some people that I know are pretty big in the art community, and they're really worried about it because they obviously put their art out online for people to see and purchase and enjoy, but then there's nothing stopping an engineer from taking that and feeding it into the AI model, and then there's literally no way they could prove it if that art was used to create a new piece of art with AI and then sold for $100 million.
In the style of a particular artist?
Exactly. Even. In the style, or it could be an amalgamation of styles, but it's sort of the ethical... It's still an ongoing conversation. We still don't have an answer to it. The community doesn't have an answer to it. I guess at the moment, it's just down to personal opinion.
So have we got, AI is obviously a progressive sort of thing. Like, we're talking about AI at the moment. and it's very still in its infancy, really.
Yeah,
And
absolutely.
then you've got general AI, and general AI has always been 5 years away for the last 40 years. Do you think we'll get to a stage where we have sort of general AI? And general AI is when it's like basically
Sentient.
human sentience sort of
Yeah.
level intellect.
Well, there is something called the Turing test, invented by Alan Turing, who was an English
What did you do?
mathematician. Yeah.
Codebreaker for MIT.
Codebreaker,
Codebreaker.
exactly. Yep. And he created the Turing test, which is basically you're shielded from the person taking the test or the thing taking the test. And the test is designed to prove that the entity is sentient. So you and I, we could all take that test and pass it, hopefully. But if the AI takes that test and passed it, it's therefore deemed sentient, not human, but sentient. And that's a whole nother ethical sort of discussion. If it has thoughts and feelings, if it has emotions, if it's a person, we still don't know. So what was the question? I got a bit carried away.
About
But
oh, how long before you get to that general AI sentient level?
because
Oh,
because because
that's
one
right.
of one of the things you said earlier on about like the neural networks are using, say for instance, a CPU to represent one neuron. Yeah, human brain's got what, 80 odd billion neurons, probably
Oh, yeah.
most complex structure in the universe that we know of. How can we get to the same level of sentience as something that is so advanced? Like, we don't have the energy to
Yeah, so it's
just
not really one CPU as a neuron. It's you can that's
yeah
all.
or
I get what you mean. Yeah,
yeah.
I think I read somewhere that the human brain, with its 80 trillion neurons or whatever it is, consumes about 20 watts of power, which is a really, really small light bulb.
That's
At our current stage,
smaller if you Matt's is more like an LED light bulb or a
that's because I'm environmentally efficient. I'm buying
no 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 it's,
LED.
no it's because his is on a dimmer switch.
But if you powered an equivalent computer with the same processing power as a human brain, it would take 800 million watts of power.
Yeah.
So on the hardware side, we're definitely quite a way away. And on the software side, it's really, I mean, the advancements that we're seeing in the market, not even in agriculture, but they're astonishing. But creating a sentient brain in a computer is just it. Like, we may see it in our lifetimes. It's pretty hard to put a pin on. Like you say, it's been 5 years away for
Same
25 years.
as our nuclear fusion. It's one of these technologies that's
Now,
always far away.
yeah,
Yeah.
just outside of our reach. But Andrew had a slight admire my intelligence, but I wanted to ask your query around artificial intelligence, and particularly Andrew and I have used more recently ChatGPT. If you look at our website, and we mentioned before, we use it mainly to do images.
Image creation.
Yeah. Now, it's meant to
Look,
be.
and to be honest, the reason why we use that is because of the fact that we need to put an image, like a cover image, on each article we produce. We can go to those sort of websites that have, royalty images and whatever. That's expensive. For a company like us, that's, tens of thousands a year. We just can't afford that. But we can create an image that fits in with our stylistic, our humors,
That's
and
the
then
other the other
throw in.
the other aspect. I was speaking about this last night to this group at Mortlake too, that the beauty of that generated image now is because I used to, even with the free image sites that are photos have been taken by photographers, and they've got various sites you can use without royalty payments and use legitimately. Even those ones, you could spend 20 minutes looking for the right type of image, right? So that's time wasted. Whereas now we can just get on and say, give me an image that's got all these things in it. And normal,
Sometimes they're dodgy
well,
though.
that's what I'm getting at. That's
Oh.
my bit about the intelligence question, because there was one time I remember where I asked it for an image of cattle, and deciding between a sign saying herd liquidation and a sign saying herd rebuild,
It doesn't do
right?
text.
It couldn't, and I did it all in inverted, like, just told it what I needed in the sign, and it just kept giving me misspelt stuff and multiple times. In the end, it took about 20 minutes.
Also,
Huh?
if you and we'll put out an AI generated image for this podcast,
Yeah.
and we usually have all the people wearing Crocs, it always puts the Crocs on the
On
wrong
the wrong
feet.
feet. Yep. Or
Really?
there was that one. There was one
Always,
you. There was the
always.
one. There was one you did recently, Andrew, where it was us meant to be talking to a group of farmers at the beach in what is it? Not Vanuatu, New
Noumea, New
Caledonia, whatever.
Caledonia.
Yeah. And I know that you asked multiple times.
About a dozen times. I wanted the group of farmers to be male and female.
Yep.
It would not put female farmers there.
Yeah.
Damn.
So if it's meant to be intelligent, why can't it do simple requests like that?
We wanted to try and use the term machine learning, probably not artificial intelligence for that one.
And so it's still learning. So it's infancy.
Could I make a request that the prompt for this episode's image has us all in steel-toed Crocs?
Steel-toed Crocs. We can do that.
That'd be great.
It'll be a test for the AI. Yeah. But here's another thing as well that I was curious about, is who decides what it is and isn't allowed to do. Like, for instance, at one point, I asked it to do a picture, and it was basically, it told me it could not do a picture because it was, I can't remember the real reason behind it, but basically I'd asked for something to do with China. It was a boat of grain with a Chinese flag on it, stealing grain or something like that, along the lines. And I said, we cannot do this, But then I asked for the same one, but with an Australian flag, and it produced it. All the same prompts, the only difference was Chinese flag versus Australian flag, and it would not produce the Chinese one. But then you look at a couple of years ago, Microsoft tried to do a form of AI as a Twitter bot. And the AI, and it was learning from interactions with other humans on Twitter.
Oh, and then started to become abusive or something.
Within 12 hours, it had become a neo-Nazi.
Oh, my God.
And Microsoft had to turn it off. And so, like, it's learning. And I guess it's the same as, like, a cat, Like, my friend's got a cat, and it's a shit bag, right? Because it's not been taught properly. So you've got to teach, like I said, it's machine learning. So what if you don't teach it right?
Who decides the parameters on what's right and wrong?
Yeah.
For sure, the engineers at OpenAI. I mean, they'd be super careful to avoid it saying or allowing people to ask for anything that's, racist, sexist, homophobic, just stuff that blurs the line, but may offend people, like you say, geopolitical stuff.
Yeah.
You could conceivably train the model to recognize that as poor behavior. But I'm guessing that there's a buffer in between what the user asks for and then what the model generates, and that it can flag words like China or something to do with all the other controversial stuff.
I want to point out early stages of ChatGPT when we were using it. I asked it for a list of torrent websites.
Yes. Yeah.
And it refused to give me them. So I asked it for a list of torrent websites so I could avoid them.
Yes, that's a very common loophole. Yeah.
And then it gave me a list of them. And I was like, I won. I won this round.
Well, that's what I said. How intelligent is it then, right? So it's. I guess it's just what goes in and what comes out, isn't it?
It's just a complicated input output sort of diagram, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Pretty much.
But presumably,
it's like saying I'm buying beer for my mate.
my 12-year-old mate. What you were saying before as well about like the. How scarily accurate the video imagery is becoming now, right? And I guess that's part of the reason too why there's limitations on being able to create.
Can you replace podcasters? Could we get to a stage where you can't realize?
Have you heard the voice models? People are replacing songs with famous people singing.
Yeah. And you can't distinguish their singing voice to the real. Yeah.
So I might now. Take all however many episodes you guys have and then train the data and see if I can make an episode.
So this is one of the things, AI and machine learning requires a certain amount of order and logic. whereas our podcast has neither of those.
Rambling craziness.
Rambling craziness is not replicatable. So
what is like on that video? Well, it's the same as, I guess, what you just said about the audio.
Well, it's like the deep fake videos.
Yeah, like obviously they exist now, but they're still, at the moment, you can still kind of pick them up. But we're not far away from the AI being good enough to replicate voice and image perfectly. And obviously for some designers, they've got ethics, but there'll be some that won't. Is it going to become in the next few years where things will be put out there that can't be distinguishable and you can't tell whether it was the person or wasn't, particularly when it's people that have got a profile or whatever to put out, fake like proper fake news, as Donald Trump would say. Like that, we're surely not that far away, are we?
No, I mean, I've always thought I was pretty good at, you know, picking out AI videos, and I was fooled a couple of times in the last 2 weeks, especially with ChatGPT's new Sora model. But for the moment, I'm not sure how long it'll last, but a trick you can always use to detect fake images or videos is usually the water, because AI has a really hard trouble getting moving water right.
But then if you look at like video games and stuff, I don't know if you play video games, but you look at things like ray tracing.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you've got a decent graphics card, that is much more impressive than it was 4 years ago. So yeah. it does advance. Water and fire, I guess organic movement is the difficulty it has. And shadows.
Yeah, absolutely. That all rounds back to what we were saying about how long is true AI away. Mm. With the advancements we've seen in technology, like in graphics cards in the last 10 years, it's been an exponentially increasing curve.
And price.
But
also, I was just actually thinking about going back to that, like creation of videos, yeah? Remember, Matt, last week or 2 weeks ago, we had Layla McDougall on,
mm-hmm.
who was, she self-funded a film, 1.5.
Actually, today is the premiere, the red carpet in a gala in Melbourne.
Melbourne.
Oh, nice.
Yep.
We got invited to it, but we couldn't make it.
I'm going to the Ballarat one next week, 20th.
But anyway, so she spent $1.5 million making this film, yeah? But the film is obviously, making any film is about creativity, yeah?
Yep.
But maybe at least ChatGPT things, and I've seen a lot of like fan fiction type videos where people do CGI or whatever else. And that CGI takes a long time, yeah? Or it did used to.
Yeah.
But maybe we're getting to a stage where you can do all that CGI, all that special effects for film. Because that was, like, if you look at like a Star Wars film, CGI will be like 20% of the budget, maybe.
Oh, maybe, easily, yeah.
But maybe this AI, you can actually start, you can have smaller companies, smaller, more in-house sort of boutique studios making films.
It could even be that you use something like Sora to create a video or a movie or however long you can make them, and then just go in and touch it up with a smaller budget, maybe. I don't know.
The Egg Watchers feature film.
Feature film. We could have the... I wonder if... Right, I didn't do this before this, but there is a button on Zoom where I can create a summary and I can create a transcript of it, yeah? I wonder if and this may be a project for us, Matt, on the Christmas break next year.
In our spare time.
Take the transcript from a podcast, throw it into Sora, and get it to replicate, make a video of the transcript.
Of the AI.
Absolutely could. Yeah, you'd have to tell it to portray it in a way that's, I don't know, walking through a forest or something. But
film noir.
Yeah.
Steampunk.
There you go. It's worth a shot.
And so the thing is, because one of the things it doesn't let you do is actually use, like I've asked it before, to create an image of a person in the style of a famous person, right?
Yeah,
it won't do that necessarily, right? Like if I said, we do our Egg Watchers movie in a film noir style, but then we say, make the Andrew Whitlock character look like Begbie from Trainspotting, it won't do it. Right.
Yeah, but there is, like, that's ChatGPT, but there is other image generation where you can actually put your own image in. But we just haven't paid for that.
And I've
actually forgot the name of it, but I can find it.
I suppose if you ask for a particular style of artist, that might constitute copyright infringement because you're trying to create someone's art as opposed to just
Charlie Chaplin,
1920s style.
Well, he's now free, is he? We could do it as Mickey Mouse because that's
you could do. Was it Steamboat Willie?
So I guess that's the main ethical thing that I sort of see from it is creativity. You still require creativity to create new content.
Absolutely.
But on the other side of it, how many jobs? I saw something from Queensland Farms Federation. Renee had retweeted something yesterday about how technology could take away 40% of jobs in the next 20 years.
Yeah, right. Wow.
And so, like, you're all right because you're in... You're already in AI, so you'll be fine. Matt's okay because in 20 years' time, not too much of an issue for him. But I'm in the middle ground.
Well, you're Scottish, so 10 years' time for you, mate.
10 years, yes. I suppose we'll be fine. But like, what do people do if the jobs go?
Again, that's probably something a question that the industry just doesn't have answers to. I've seen a lot of companies in America that are building sort of self-driving agricultural machinery, they're taking the workers that were displaced by this technology and are retraining them to sort of service it or to be technicians, engineers, and create the skilled labor force that's required to maintain such a high technolo or a high technologically advanced industry, which is
Or
one way that people could go about it for sure.
you start investing in kind of robotic type things that can you own the robotic equipment or the robotic humanoid, but then they do the work and you just get a fee for the work they do and you just sit back earning income from what you've
And
invested.
then they decide, why am I doing this for human?
They take over.
And they take over. Then they start poison, they put salt in the machinery. They're like, nah, bugger that. Put sugar in the petrol tank of the
Oh.
what here's another one as well though, yeah? Like if we look at the history of humanity, yeah, it's been about efficiency and increasing efficiency. So we had the cottage industries making textiles in the 1600s and previous. Then it turned into the mills. And so you got big machinery pumping out huge amounts of textiles. Then if you, a good another example is the car industry. You know, in a very short period of time, you had cars getting made in the same way as a horse and cart. And then Henry Ford came along, standardized things. And then within 40 years, it was robotics doing it. And so it's always been that jobs have really been taken away from like the blue collar workers, really. The manufacturing, the things that are just a same pattern. Like it's not pattern recognition, but it's you stamp this thing, the next stage you stamp this thing, the next stage you stamp this thing, blah, 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 blah. But the way I see with AI is it actually goes up to the white collar industry, actually even more than the blue collar, in that it takes away jobs from lawyers, copywriters,
Graphic designers.
graphics designers.
There was a really recent South Park episode on what you're describing where AI took over all the jobs that people do, like therapists and accountants. The only people that were left making money were tradespeople. The stuff that AI can't do is just
What?
tradies and handymen making a lot of money.
Well, creativity, like art,
Yeah.
woodwork.
But we were saying before that the AI can learn from other creative styles to be creative. And if it then becomes an amalgamation of multiple different types of styles, then it's another new style of creativity all done by the AI.
So we've got two solutions, I see it. All right, off the back of this podcast and this discussion, we've got two solutions.
Cancel all AI.
No, well,
Move to Mars.
one is we get ahead of this and destroy all the computers before they can take over
That's not good for business.
and ban AI. Number two, universal basic income.
And then you just sit back and do
And
creative things and
stroke communism.
That is, that's pretty much communism. You're right.
But well, how like it's interesting because we should do a podcast on UBI because I find it quite interesting because it is all some people on the left, some people on the right like it. But it is a case of if there's no jobs, the worst thing society can have is people out of work because it
I'm going to give you an
makes them angry.
alternative.
Like Judge Dredd.
What's
Go
the
back to
alternative?
how we had it in this country, what, a couple decades ago, and make university free, and then you can train the workforce, or some of the workforce that want to go down that path, to become the skilled laborers that will survive an AI world.
But the thing is, AI keeps taking, like, as soon as you start doing a degree, the AI has decided, oh, there's a value in it.
Sorry. Andrew,
And
I thought you got.
they also, I was going to say that they also have free university education in Scotland already.
That's
Ah, you
a, I was
got
I was gonna say I was gonna say I'm so disappointed in you, Andrew, for
Because
not inserting.
as people will know, this is a couple of extra facts in here because we actually were adding, and we're trying to add an educational thing into this podcast, and we've had a lot of them. We've had the Turing test last week. Well, on Tuesday we had the Hawthorne effect, so we've had two bits of education this week, but I also want to highlight that Scotland has free university education,
Well, we've got sun.
free healthcare, free sanitary towels, free prescriptions. So
That's very good.
it's a very socialist country. So we're actually set up for AI because nobody has to work in Scotland.
No one goes outside because it's too cold anyway.
Well, the robots won't be able to come because the solar panels won't work, will they?
Yeah, that's fair enough.
They'll
No
have
renewable
to
energy.
turn us into batteries like in the Matrix.
To bring it back, so you obviously focus on the spraying and what you're doing now presently, but say in the next, 5 years, have you got another, are you just going to keep refining what you're doing now in that space, or have you got other ideas in that agricultural
area where you can.
He's not going to tell you on a podcast that 16,000 people listen to.
Trade secrets. No, we're definitely always going to refine our idea and keep bringing the best version of the wheat select system that we can to the growers. But we are looking at potentially entering broadacre in the next 5 years, depending on the market size and if the market's not already completely saturated with it.
Do you know your biggest market should be?
What's that?
Local councils.
We have got a couple of contacts in our local councils and golf courses as well.
Because local councils have got to reduce their chemical uses because people are complaining about glyphosate use and all that kind of stuff. And if you can show that kind of reduction to them, they will lap it up and they'll pay
attention. Yeah, totally agree.
I mean, this has been really interesting. Like, I really enjoyed the sort of the philosophical discussion around AI because I'm not sure where it leads at all. I'm not sure whether it's good or bad or indifferent.
We're still figuring that out. It's still a huge conversation. We could go on for hours about it.
I'm scared, Matt.
They haven't yet built, you know, suitable AI ones that could, you know, analyze markets like you and I, Andrew. You know, in an entertaining and, you know, engaging way.
Give me 6 months, I'll do it.
Well, neither was that funny. So
that's true. But if it's in our, you know, I was going
to
say,
I'm pretty sure you get an algorithm to do a lot of crap jokes and one-liners,
bad top references from the '80s.
Because I go back to that sort of creativity, yeah? And I just think there is an option for like a lot of filmmakers and stuff. It's completely off top of agriculture, but filmmakers could put out even pilots for TV shows or pilots for movies, in a quarter of the time.
Instead of old storyboard, like an old storyboard drawn up that would have taken a while to do already, you could almost do a little AI version of it or something.
And you could probably create things that are just completely out of this world.
You absolutely could. I mean, it's back to that ethical discussion of it's all trained on other people's work, but it is in essence creating new work. You could create something that's entirely new.
I think one of the other takeaways from this podcast is there's the potential for AI to take over at some point. That'll be the quote for the podcast. So what we should be doing is when we're using ChatGPT, always say please and thank you.
That's called the...
because it will remember.
Rocco's Basilisk is the thought experiment. That when AI takes over, they're going to look back at everyone's conversation history and see who was positive and helped AI to progress further and people who actively hindered it. And they're going to punish everyone who hindered it or spoke negatively about AI. So you better get started right now.
Can you go back and apologize? I got pretty angry when it couldn't do the stuff I needed to do for the picture. So I was a bit abusive. I was a little bit abusive, probably improperly abusive to the AI. Sorry. Yeah, I'll have to go back and find that conversation. Yeah.
But it's going to be interesting because it has really, the last 2 years, become like more commonplace. Like the new Samsung phone is heavily reliant on AI. I'm imagining Siri is going to be the same. Although my Siri, I've made it to change mine to East London accent. So that's pretty cool. No Scottish ones yet. But it is going to become a bigger and bigger part of society. And it'll be interesting to see how it goes.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see, you know, what we sort of do ourselves now that we have no sort of thought about, like doing the washing or something, that is replaced with AI, or even something at work in the offices. We can't really predict that.
So what we need to do is have another podcast on this in a year's time, if we can get permission from our AI overlords.
Yep. So then the previous schedule, they might agree to it.
Anything else to add, Matt?
No, I think it's been good. No, it'd be good to catch up with you in person.
Actually, I had one other sort of point. And again, I said I didn't want to go on to science fiction. I love science fiction, by the way. Singularity as a concept.
That's what we were talking about, as AI taking over or AI having sentience.
But singularity is a bit more than that. Then it's pretty much just able to create everything at once.
Have you seen the movie Transcendence with Johnny Depp?
Oh, God, that was dire.
Yeah.
It was dire.
I mean, that's pretty much what it would be like, accessing the internet, manipulating financial markets, buying up property, taking advantage of people all of us who can do nothing about it. And then, you know, what's the end goal? World domination or making society better? getting rid of or identifying humans as the virus and extinguishing us? Can't know.
Just gone down a dark route, this podcast.
Sleep well tonight.
I'm glad I've got my bunker sorted out, Andrew.
Yep. You got a doomsday bunker, do you?
No, Andrew.
He lives in Ballarat. It's the same thing.
Yeah, pretty much. No one's going there anyway.
Certainly not in the winter. There you go. No, fantastic. No, it'll be good to catch up in person at the conference. So for those
absolutely.
That haven't got tickets, you know, these are the interesting things we'll be chatting about up on the stage. The future. The future
we're
of
exhibiting at Future Ag as well.
Yeah, we'll come and see it then.
Yeah, it'd be great. See you guys there.
Okay, that sounds good. Thanks for coming on, Ben. See you when you've got nothing on.
Ciao for now.
Easy done. Thanks for having me.